Hello, Do You Even Blog listeners. Pete here from Do You Even Blog. Do You Even Blog? There, I said my brand name three times in the first 10 seconds of this episode. You know it has been a long day win. Anywho, thank you so much for tuning in today. Have a really great guy, Robert Farrington from thecollegeinvestor.com on again. That's right. He was on this podcast, 2.5 years ago or more, almost 3 years ago at this point. Ooh, time flies when you're podcasting. Anyways, Robert is joining me again today to talk about what's going on in his own business. I'm pretty sure I can safely assume it's a multi-million dollar blog at this point. I don't know his exact numbers or whatnot, but I just assume so. He's been around for a long while now. His traffic is massive. Really cool brand. He's got a full team or whatnot. And this episode, we actually we just run the gamut. We just kind of hop on. This is really conversational and casual. I'm not going to do a whole lot of editing. We talk about this. We talk about that. We talk about SEO. We talk about updating old content. We talk about some pretty advanced affiliate marketing stuff. We talk about Robert's lack of focus on email marketing and a bunch of other stuff. I think there are some gems. I was going to say hidden in here. There's some gems, but they're buried. You got to go listen. No, it's a casual conversation. And so there's no logical flow. I'm just going to give you the heads up now, give you the warning now. But luckily, Robert is a super smart guy and he has a lot of value to give. So there you go. I shall not go on any further other than to say thank you for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, tell a friend. I know I always say that, but I do mean that. There's not going to be any takeaways after the episode or whatnot. I'll probably just hit end or whatnot. And other than that, I hope you enjoy this lovely chat with the one, the only Robert Farrington. All right, we are live. Robert, thecollegeinvestor.com. Welcome back to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
You look excited to be here, and that's awesome. No, so Robert will join me. That was well over 2 years ago at this point. That's kind of weird. You said off air, you get to talk a lot about finance and personal finance with your own brand, but not a whole lot of business. So here we are today. I'm in my basement that feels like a dungeon. Robert's in his garage office with a pretty backdrop. You guys can't see that, but we're hanging out. We're going to chat business. So why don't we just kick it off with that thing I tell all podcasters not to do. How the heck are you? Give me an update about how are you and what have you been up to?
I'm doing good. So, you know, I'm up to the same thing. I am a constant tinkerer, right? So, like, always trying new things, testing things out. I remember when we talked, we were sitting in the lobby of FinCon. What was that? Yep. What year? Yeah. Orlando.
So 2018. Like
So long ago, right? And we were just having a fun conversation. And it's been a long time. And I've been listening to your show. And I just love talking business. I don't get to do it much. So I'm excited to talk shop with you. We can talk business of blogging, anything you want to go into. Like, I think it'll be fun. Let's just have a conversation around it.
I got an idea. So it may have actually been you that told me about this, or I could be making this up. It could have been somebody completely different. I was talking with somebody. I think it was you. And we were talking about some of the best live presentations and workshops and keynotes that we've seen at like different conferences. Tell me if this is you or not, by the way. And one of the ones that you brought up was the founder of like WP Beginner or something like this, who got up on stage and was just like, I'm just going to share with you some things that are working for me right now. Here's 10 things in my business that are working for me. Was that you, by the way?
That was game changing. So that was at Social Media Marketing World. We were talking about this, and it's Syed Balaki. I probably butchered his last name. And he, you know, founder of WP Beginner and Monster Insights and probably like a dozen, you know, software as a service companies we all use in the online marketing space. Guy's a genius. He's really young too. He went up on stage. If anyone's familiar with conferences, you have to pitch your your shtick, you know, 9 months in advance, right? Yeah. And you say like what you're going to present. And so I'm sure he did that, but he gets up on stage and he's like, I pitched something and I don't really care about that stuff anymore. That was a long time ago. I made a list in my hotel room last night of the 10 things that are game changing in my business today. And that's what I'm going to talk to you about. And it was probably the most mind blowing talk I've ever had because the guy was given actionable insights and tips. And some of it was like, low level, some of it was more broad, right? But like, I mean, that was value for me and I loved it. That was great.
Well, I hate to do it, but I'm gonna put you on the spot.
We're doing
here.
It. All right, let's do
I'm gonna
it.
Make You know what? Maybe we can even go back and forth because I have like one or two that I think I could come up with later. And I can also buy you some time to, you know, to think. But why don't we just throw Robert under the bus really quick? You can do one at a time. I want to hear some things that are working for you in the college investor. I tell you what, to give you a second, I'm going to buy you a little bit of time. I am going to make you tell us the 60-second version for those who don't know you and your site. What is the college investor? Just give us a 60-second overview of you, the topic, the business.
Yeah, so I started the College Investor 12 years ago as a side hustle, and it has grown into a really nice personal finance and media site that we talk about getting out of student loan debt, starting investing, building wealth for really anybody, but I focus on younger people. And we get over 4 million visitors a month today, and we are trying to grow cross multi-platform, right? So we have the blog, which is our home base. We do video. We do a podcast that just passed 1 million downloads. You know, I'm trying to do a bunch of social media stuff. It's a lot of fun what it's grown into, but I always think of my mission is how do we help people navigate those complex financial decisions, especially when it comes to student loans and, you know, personal finance and investing. Cause, you know, there's a lot of bad information out there. And so, you know, we try to be the good information and try to get people going the right direction.
Yeah. Okay. That was good. That was under 60 seconds too, I'm pretty sure. By the way, didn't you outsource like your entire podcast? Is that correct?
That is correct. So our podcast is, I call it an almost daily show. We take our editorial content. We don't really do a podcast for reviews, but we take our editorial content and we transition it into audio. And so I have a voice actor on my team that's amazing. And he reads / ad libs it. So, I mean, you wouldn't necessarily, if you're listening to the podcast, you wouldn't know it's a blog post. But then if you read the blog post, you'd see like it really is the blog post. So, but he's really great about ad libbing it, making it sound like user friendly. And it's really been popular. So as a result, most of our podcast episodes are 6 to 10 minutes. I think one of my longest ones in the last like 6 months was 20 minutes. And that was because I wrote a massive blog post. But, you know, I think it's also very quick, digestible, easy tips about money, you know, 3 to 5 times a week.
Do you monetize this in any way? Or I'm assuming you do. But how does that contribute to the monetization efforts of your business?
Yes and no. So I am a big believer in, you know, this Venn diagram of my audience. And I believe there's a subset, there's a big group of people that are readers, right? And that's the middle. There's listeners and there's visual watchers, YouTube people. I think they all overlap as a Venn diagram, but I also think that people love to just play in their mediums. So my real goal is to how can I get my best knowledge to you in the medium that you naturally want to consume it in. And for the podcast specifically, I don't really monetize it a whole lot. We do tie it in with some sponsored content and brand partnerships. We do a little bit of, you know, sometimes a pre-roll ad here and there, but I would say 90% of the audio show is literally just, you know, the content. And, you know, of course we'll say like, hey, you want to open a checking account, like if that's what we're talking about in the article, like come to the site, you know, and I'm sure people do click through, but you know, it's a very indirect. I consider it more brand awareness. Let's meet people where they're at. I want them to get our best content, how they want to digest it.
I got a question for you then. Maybe we'll come back to the whole what's working.
We'll right go with this. Just keep going. It's all good.
Walk me through show notes and not, I'm not talking about the description that you will actually put in. I don't know who your podcast host is, but like when you upload audio files to XYZ host, you'll type in a little intro, you'll maybe plug your own site, maybe some affiliate links or whatever that looks like. Not that. Do you do any show notes on your main site?
No, it's embedded in the article that the topic is about. So, I mean, that is the show notes. Okay. I mean, like, there's not really a show note. Like, I don't do like a timestamp thing, but like the content is the article and the article is the show.
I got you.
And, you know, and so, yeah. And like, honestly, we can take it to the next level. Like I use Libsyn, right? For my hosting, for my podcast. And we make custom thumbnails for every episode now. So like Spotify is honestly my main, where I like to publish the most to, right? I love Spotify's platform. I love that they have a follow button so you can build a following for your podcast on Spotify. Yeah. Yeah. But then I create an individual thumbnail for each episode. That thumbnail matches the thumbnail of the blog post. right? So everything jives. And honestly, if you want to talk like SEO or things like that, the meta description of my blog post is basically the description I'm using in Spotify for my podcast content. So we're reusing a lot of the same stuff. We're just putting it in different mediums to translate to, you know, how people are consuming the content.
I like that. I like that a lot. All right, so let's go backwards then. Maybe I've given you enough time to get some other juicy ideas. But other than completely outsourcing podcasts for your blog posts is amazing. What else is working for you right now or in the past like 6 months?
I mean, we've done a whole bunch of different things. So I would say number one has been a data analytics focus for me. And that's been over the last 18 months, really made a lot of progress in the last 6 months, but it's transitioning our partners. So the reason I reached out to you is I remember this is you were talking about how you were trying to manage your affiliates. So that's basically my advertising model, right? So I have a bunch of partners. I have 500 partners at this point in time. How do you manage all that? How do you know who's performing, who's not performing? How do you follow up on all that? And so I would spend the last 18 months and then really seen the fruits of our labor over the last 6 months in putting that into a system. I use Asana. We use Woopra for data analytics. But now I can tell you
Woopra?
Woopra. Woopra is a data analytics platform.
Okay.
W-O-O-P-R-A. Woopra. It's pricey. We're talking advanced affiliate marketing. It's marketing now. Yeah. We're not doing the beginning stuff. But what that allows me to do now is I can see user acquisition multi-channel. I can summarize all of my, you know, affiliates by page, who's performing the best, click-through rates, revenue, CPA. But like, you know, I'll do an article like best free checking accounts, 10 of them, right? You know, 8 of them might be affiliates. Well, who's, you know, earning me the most money? Who's paying me what by a CPA model? Who is having the highest click-through rate? So here's an interesting one that we discovered from this, right? So my number one choice of, you know, checking accounts, for example, had a 3% click-through rate and was paying me, you know, $50 an account, right? Just giving this example up there. My number two, though, was converting at 8%. And they were only paying me at, or they were paying me at 75, but they were converting over 2.5 times better. And so like taking this data and then going back to the advertisers and being like, you need to fix this. Number one, number two, like we talk about payouts. Number three, like it's not low hanging fruit, but you can take that data and you could optimize, you know, how to increase your revenue per page. Because honestly, we get a lot of traffic. I'm not going to necessarily scale my traffic much more organically. You know, like if you're already in a top position in search, like that's what you're getting. You're getting 1,000 visitors a month or whatever it happens to be. But if you can suddenly take your revenue per page and double it, or you can take your click-through rate and double it, now you're starting to see more interesting things happen. You can also do things now with your analytics like paid advertising campaigns. And you can see if they're profitable in the affiliate space. Because when you have live data and you can see the revenue per page and you know exactly what you're converting and you can see, you can track a conversion from Google to your website to, you know, the affiliate, and you can see all that all live, you can actually do effective paid ads, not just like the spray and pay. Like I spent $5,000, I made $7,000. Woo!
I got a question for you. So you get 4 million visits a month. Let's dial it back to the average Do You Even Blog listener.
Yep.
I don't actually know what that is. That'd be cool if I had that data, but I don't. What is the point of which you should spend less time on acquisition, SEO, or Pinterest, or YouTube, or otherwise, whatever that is, and on optimization? Because I consider them, they're not always like drastically two different phases, two different sets of activities per se. But there does reach a point, like you said, when there are diminishing returns on how much Robert actually spends going and getting backlinks now. Like that, you could do that, but like your time might be better spent elsewhere. Where's that line? Where should people think about that?
Honestly, you should make a routine of it. And so one of the things I did is I started taking my top 100 content, and you could start this with 10 or 50, but go into Google Analytics, go to, you know, top content, and then go take your spreadsheet, expand it out, and download that. and then put it in a task manager like Asana. And so I actually have an Asana task called, you know, check top 100 content. And I have a person on my team help me with this, and we do it quarterly. Because here's what happened to me is I like creating new content. And now my site's 12 years old. So I was just keeping, just churning out the new content. But like, I was never going back to this old content. And I, that was what was earning traffic, you know, and that's where people were visiting, and things just naturally change over time. So it didn't even start on this like high level of optimization. It started with, I wrote an article 5 years ago that, you know, actually ranks number 20 in my top content. So it wasn't like the top 10. I wasn't looking at it all the time, but it was there. It was in like number 20. It was still getting really good traffic every month. And it just didn't have anything relevant anymore. It didn't even necessarily have an offer. I didn't know what I was doing when I started. And I just never went back and fixed it, right? And then the other thing is products, services, and tools change. Both from a new stuff comes on the market, old stuff doesn't keep up, you know, new innovative products change, pricing changes, new features come from maybe the thing that was number three when you wrote the article, now like really updated and innovated, now they're number one, you recommend them. Like if you're not going back and changing what you're talking about, your content gets stale, which I think plays a, you know, massive role across the board from both how you're helping your listeners to what Google thinks to yada, 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 right? Yeah. And it also increases your revenue because, you know, people are going to that article, but are they converting what you want them to convert? Does it align with your message? If someone read your latest thing today and then happened to bounce back in your archives, would it all jive? Like, I don't know. And so now we've made a routine of it. And I think that was really key for me is doing this full audit. So first off, I did a full audit. But hopefully if you're listening to this and you're only at like 25 or 50 pieces of content, you can get into this routine early enough that, you know, you don't have to go through 1,000 pieces of content and really update it. But start with manageable chunks and make it a routine every single quarter, at least every single 6 months or a year.
Yeah, I should officially release a YouTube video that's like how I literally doubled my SEO traffic in 1 hour, because that actually happened. Of course, it's not hard to double it when you have, you know, as little traffic as I have to my site. And that's not just me being modest. Like I don't focus on traffic at all. And I have it for 2.5 years now, but I literally did exactly what you just said in late December, early January. I hadn't updated any blog posts for a year, like all of 2020. Not one, not like a little bit, like I dabbled here. No, nothing. And so I went back through and I updated 3 posts. 2 were just like my big pillar content, mega post, whatever the heck you want to call it. And then 1 was just this random piece of content that I never thought would do anything and ended up getting traffic. I noticed that traffic was like almost completely died off. It was still relevant. It was still good. The topic. I went in, I maybe spent an hour like updating dates, changing 2020 to 2021. And also just, you know, making the content better. It wasn't just changing dates. And sure enough, I mean, it was 48 hours. And I actually logged into Ahrefs and Google Analytics, and I was like taking a look around. I was like, dang, that actually worked. Like this was super effective for not a lot of time. It's mind boggling. I'll also underscore one other thing you said, building a routine of it. I think half of the valuable insights, that's a good way to put it. Half of the valuable insights that you get from looking at your top 100 pieces of content or whatever are discovered over time. Meaning you could break out an hour tomorrow afternoon, you can go analyze your top 100 posts and you can go update some of that and yada, yada. I think it's even more valuable to you to spend 15 minutes a week on that or a couple of days every quarter or whatever that looks like and get that feedback over time. Like these topics continue to do well. These topics were really short bursts, but they also got backlinks through whatever reason. Like it's so easy, so much easier to find those insights when you're consistently and constantly like analyzing that stuff.
Totally. And you know what? We all have these pieces of content, especially in the finance space, that are seasonal. So if you're not doing this quarterly, you know, you might find something like, I don't know, we're recording this in tax season, right? So like tax season articles are popular now. But if I was to look at my content in August, it's zero traffic because no one cares, you know? And, you know, I think there's a lot of bloggers out there that might have like holiday related posts, you know, like you might have a killer Christmas piece, right? Or something around the holidays. And if you try to analyze that in, you know, May, you're going to be like, what? This doesn't make any sense. So I think you're totally right. You need to also realize that, but you learn the trends of your customers, your behaviors. Some of the things we learned from that too is when do these seasons start? Because like you have a gut feeling, if you've been doing this long enough, you kind of know, like, let's just say you're a holiday blogger. You know, or you have a site that has holiday traffic, right? You know that like, oh, people start shopping in maybe October, but when does it really start? And then work backwards. What do you need to have updated in place for 2021 based on when you know the traffic started in 2020, right? So maybe it was actually the first people were looking at it, because I have some diehard loyal holiday people. It's September 1st is actually the start date of Christmas, right? I don't know. I'm just throwing this out here, right? And so that means maybe you need to actually get Christmas going in July. By July 30th, you need to have your Christmas content updated. I don't know. I discovered that in the tax marketplace. So you know when tax season starts? The day after Thanksgiving, Black Friday.
Interesting.
You know why? Because early filers that are getting a refund naturally want to file as fast as humanly possible. And a lot of them take their last pay stub of the year, which could come the last week of December, and they go and try to file their taxes. And they're doing their homework and their research for taxes in December. And so tax season actually starts the day after Thanksgiving. Yeah. And you know why I find this interesting? I want to talk about it a little bit, is because some of the big brands, TurboTax, H&R Block, they know this. And they launch their tax software every year on November 15th. And they usually have their first sale of the year on Black Friday. But then you have these new players in the space, a Credit Karma Tax, for example, that don't have seasoned marketing teams, that have only been doing this for three seasons, and they launch on January 1st every year. And what do these brands do? They lose that whole first wave of customers because they failed to launch their product on time. Yeah. So anyways, side rant.
Well, side rant, can I actually just turn this into a big, broad tip?
We can do it. Let's do it.
Okay. So I think it is undervalued to become intimately aware of everything your audience goes through from a seasonal perspective. And I have some examples here. Online Impact member Tiffany, who runs thestokefam.com, one of my private members, and she's awesome and incredible. She talks a lot about snowboarding and skiing. That's what her family does. She does it really well, by the way. She's like just crushing Instagram growth, and she's doing really well. We were chatting a little bit about this a couple of weeks ago, like trying to predict when people are buying ski gear and doing that research, which is interesting. And it's actually multiple times a year, because a lot of people, now that I'm a skier, I kind of understand this. I'm looking now. Like ski season's over. It ended 2 weeks ago where I'm at. I'm looking now for deals and on buying 2020's gear, which is now on sale, prepping for next year, ski pants and everything. It's just interesting. And there's another huge boom in mid-November right before resorts open up again and yada, yada. That's one example. Another example would be, I've been partnering with Buzzsprout, or at least I was at the end of 2020, and something they had told me was early November. It's like, no, you need to do your podcasting content now. I was planning on putting it out like late December, early January. People have New Year's resolutions, they're gonna start a podcast, they, you know, jump on that or whatever. He's like, no, you need to do it now. Part of the reason is people are going to be starting, but they're doing their research now. And, you know, it might actually take you a little bit longer to rank in YouTube, which is what I was doing for these videos or whatnot. And I hadn't really thought of that as well. Like, it'll take a couple of weeks to get this pushed out there and stuff. And I think the big point that I just want to underscore is being intimately aware of how you can take advantage of timing. I know that's a huge, broad blanket statement, but I think it's undervalued, especially for newer bloggers. I think they're obsessed with keywords going in.
Well, and I'll tell you what too, you're spot on, but like, let's talk about the timing of different things too. So if you want to rank in search or YouTube, you need to be early. You need to put the content out there a month or 3 weeks before whatever the time comes, because you need to give it time to marinate, the algorithms to work. But that doesn't mean as you get closer to the event or the holiday, you don't share it and blast it and custom craft your tweets and Facebooks and, you know, everything else to re-get it there, because that's instant, right? When you're on social media, you're looking for like what's going on today. When I'm scrolling through Instagram stories or whatnot, you want that. So like, you have to really segregate out your timing, which is challenging. So again, I'm an Asana buff. And so I leverage everything in Asana. So we have our post date scheduled, but then I have a bunch of different things like social share this, social share this. I have some stuff on recurring. So I have some stuff like I tweet out and stuff we custom share throughout tax season. So literally I have repeating Asana tasks all throughout so that it just pops up automatically. I don't have to think about it. It's in my to-do list. It's like, okay, share this article out today. But then I have the end date set for whatever the end date is. And then you can do it. And so same thing if you're a holiday or you're in the snowboarding season. It's like you can create this content early, but then continually put it in people's minds during the period that you're looking to share it in.
Totally. Yeah. And I think this applies to a lot, not just holidays and seasonal stuff.
100%.
Yeah.
Well, every business and brand has its own season. If you are doing education, right, you got the school year. If you're doing sports, every sport has its own season. So, like, you know, if you're doing, I don't know, the list goes on and on and on, right? Like, and once you get, again, you said it, you got to intimately know your audience. And cool thing is most of us are starting our online content because we're passionate. We're almost our own audience, right? And that's how we start. Ideally, we grow from there and learn more about the audience. But like, you should already have that baseline a little bit if you're passionate about what you're talking about.
Yeah, I like that. And also just trending topics in general. For example, I talk about this off air. Robert can't actually see me right now because I have a window right behind my head, which is like blotting out.
You're just like, it's like God. Like God is shining on you right through the window right there. And you have like this beautiful halo on you. Yeah. It's like the blogging God.
The blogging God. That's the blogginggod.com. Let me check that out. No, the point is I've been redoing my office for the past week. I literally went to IKEA and spent $1,500 last weekend. I have a beautiful new couch and rug. You can't see any of it, Robert. But the point is, I've actually been doing a lot of research into home office stuff. And after a while, I didn't realize YouTube was this much filled with office tours, office design. It's insane how many views these videos are getting. In fact, I'm into YouTube, so I'm the nerd that does this. I've actually taken some of these views that I just discovered naturally looking for stuff on office design. I actually plugged it into Morning Fame, which is my tool of choice for YouTube stuff. I was just curious, like, who are these creators? Do they just focus on this? Are these like subtopics within their general niche? And what I found was this specific topic just ballooned last year. Work from home, pandemic, it was just skyrocketed. And so many of these channels that I've been looking at, they just grew exponentially from these videos. These videos specifically on desk setups, office design, like stuff like this. And man, I feel sorry for anybody who is trying to reach those same people about those same topics. It's not just office design now, but any of that stuff who didn't put out timely content for the pandemic. Who were those people? That's a missed opportunity. I don't know if people just think there was already too much of that or they didn't think about it. I don't know. I feel like anybody who didn't produce pandemic related content missed out on stuff, but that's just me.
But you just nailed, I think, one of the biggest objections people have though, is there too much content out there? How can I be there? Right. And you've talked about this, you know, in depth, same in personal finance. There's so much personal finance content out there, but you know, there's a few things we have going for us. We have our unique angle. No one has your office. No one has your setup, right? Part two is no one is you, right? No one has your story and all that. And you know, if other people are creating it, it means that there's a market for it. So I think you got to do it. You owe it to your readers. And like, honestly, we're all a little voyeuristic. I love watching office setups. And anytime I see anyone post their office setup, I am zooming in. I'm trying to understand what they're doing. I'm a Redditor. So I love battle stations on Reddit.
Yep.
Yes, yep, these battle stations are just amazing. And I'm just like, whoa, like envy, you know? And so like, it is really, you know, you just, like you said, you gotta create it. Don't be shy about it. Get out there. That's the one thing I love about the internet, Pete, is, you know, you can put stuff out there, but all it took was your time. If it hits, it hits. If it doesn't hit, well, what else were you doing? Were you just watching Netflix anyways? Like, who cares? Like, go put it out there. Yeah. Try it. Don't get, you know, so hung up on all those little details. And then the cool thing is you can iterate. You know, we're not printing books. You can go back and change things. Yeah. This isn't in print. Like, it's not permanent. You can delete old content. So, like, you know, we all learn and grow. I don't know. I always think of the baseball analogy for blogging. is, you know, we all start in Little League and we all sucked when we started. And it's all content creation, YouTube, Instagram. You know, you go up to the plate, you're swinging, missing, no one's hitting the balls, but you just got to keep doing these at bats, right? You get to like major league, you get to like not major league, but majors in Little League, you're getting better, you're hitting a little more. Maybe you play college ball. Right now you're hitting a little bit better, whatnot. Then you make it to the big leagues. But you want to know, the all-stars in Major League Baseball, they're batting 300, 400. That means they're still only hitting 1 in 3 balls. It's the same with our content creation. But if we're not taking those at-bats, you're never going to get better to the point where 1 in 3 of your pieces of content hit. And shoot, I would say that's even a stretch in content creation. I'm lucky to get like 1 in 5, 1 in 7. You know, we've all been there. We create this thing that we think is going to just be amazing and no one reads it. And then on the flip side, you create this thing in like 5 minutes that you're just trying to put out there and that's the hit. Like, but you got to keep taking those at bats every single day.
Yeah. So let me riff for a second. That's like the 80-20 rule defined. But a lot of us like refuse to believe it's true. We're just like, this is gonna continue to grow my blog. This is gonna continue to grow my thing. Every little thing I do. No, I can look at my all time YouTube views and subscribers and likes and comments, and it comes from 20% of my videos. If that, it probably comes from like 10% of my videos. I can specifically point to 5 videos that have like 90%+ of all my views on YouTube, period. Let me also give you parts 3 and 4. You were talking about, you know, there's already so much content out there. People have already written about this or whatever. And you gave parts 1 and 2, which was, we all have our unique angles on things and et cetera. You actually mentioned number 3 as well. We binge things. 10 years ago, we didn't binge things as much. Now, role play with me, Robert. This is going to get awkward. Robert is really wanting to take down his wood backdrop and install a custom rigged top lighting system for his little setup that you got. You've never done any of this. I don't know if you've done it actually or not, but you've never done this. What do you do when you want to learn how to install this thing? Just walk me through what you might do.
Oh, yeah. First off, I'd go find people that I think have great lighting setups. And then I would see if they have videos or content on this, or I'd YouTube it. And then I'd start learning what all these things are, because I'm going to pretend like I don't know what it is. I really don't. You know, what kind of light is the one that goes above you? What are the side ones? What's the one that goes behind you? All that kind of thing. And then, you know, so you go from office setups and then you binge into like what the products are. And then you probably find some other office setups that show you how they're being used. And then that guy probably has like 3 other lights that he says you should do this. And then you kind of just go in these circles. And like you said, you binge around and you're like reading reviews, going to seeing how it's implemented, coming back to new reviews. And then you kind of get information overload. And then you finally find someone that you trust and you make a decision.
That's true. This is exactly my point. I love that. What I do, very similar, I will, and I've actually been doing this the past 2 weeks. I've been changing up my house. We moved. I'll go to Google. I'll search for something. I'll literally right-click and open a new tab for like the top 7 posts. I always do this. Yeah. I'm like
100%.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, done. And I'll go and just browse through every single one. Not word for word. Yep. Never word for word, but I'll browse through. That was part 3 of like, why create these things? It's because we still want your content. We still want the college investors' take on best checking accounts, even though we also have, I don't know, I was going to throw other big personal finance brands out there. I won't even do that. But like, I want Robert's take as well as some of these other ones. I like multiple opinions. I like multiple blogs. I want to hear what you, dear listener, have to say about any given topic too. And then, crud. I forgot part 4. I had something smart to say and I forgot it. Maybe it'll come back to me later. I remember what it was. Also, what we all do in Google these days is we'll search for something. We'll open up a couple of results, but we'll also just not even look at the headlines that are in Google SERP, but so much as the actual URL, right? Like if I've searched for best checking accounts, I'm going to scroll through there and look for, I'll probably like, maybe I'll check out the balance if they pop up. College Investor, I would check out. And some of these other like brands that I know and trust already, I'm just going to go find those in search results. I do this for everything. If I'm doing digital marketing, I will open up Kinsta's blog because I generally enjoy their stuff. WP Beginner, I always know exactly what it's going to look like before I even open the page. I'll also open up HubSpot if it's like a more general marketing thing, just because I've known to trust their content a little bit more, and yada, yada. Right. So I do think it's worth thinking about branding, especially in terms of SEO these days. And that's a real thing. Like people, more and more people are doing that, I feel like.
I agree. I do the same thing. And it's hard because, you know, especially like in the personal finance space, you can, you know, you can see who's working with who. And so like, I'll toot my own horn a little bit, but on the flip side, like, I think you should do it is that, you know, we get to kind of play with everybody. And we also are up on the newest things. We're not corporate, right? So we're independent and we're on the newest things all the time. So like, if you were looking at best checking accounts, you probably, everyone knows Bankrate. Let's not hide it, right? Like it's there, NerdWallet, right? But you start going to their content and it is the same like corporate mumbo jumbo. It's the same three. And I have the same three on my site. But you know what? I will probably also have this new startup bank that you don't know about yet because I love to play in this space. I know them. I'm trying to stay up on it. And they'll get it eventually. And it'll be there. But, you know, you're going to see different things and different reasons why. I'm not saying I don't know this for sure, but some of those sites might have it structured by the highest payout to them. You know, their number one pick might not always be aligned with you. And not to say that's wrong. I mean, maybe they're all good, right? Like, you know, you're not going to go wrong with any of them. But, you know, what are you going to get when you come here is that we actually try to do it like this one's actually free. This one doesn't have any fees. I like this one because they have high deposit limits. This one doesn't, you know, like we've been doing a lot of business banking ones right now. And one of them, this new bank has a cash envelope system built in. So you don't have to open like 7 accounts. So if you do profit first in your business, you can do it with sub accounts all lined up. Like, so there's different reasons why, and you might not get that other places. And so I'm with you. You got to click and you got to see, kind of compare. And then the other thing you get when you click on the top 7 results in Google is you also see everyone else kind of talking about the same thing. If we're talking about lighting or cameras or anything, it's like, all right, you know, it might not be number one on everyone's side, but if everyone's saying the Canon, whatever,
that's right,
is in the top choice, like, all right, we're probably not off base thinking about this product or service, right?
Yep. I've done that multiple times in the past week. That's exactly right. Oh, man. Yeah. It's interesting. What would the takeaway be? Let's sum up everything we've said in the past, like 10 or 15 minutes for everybody listening to this. And then I have another actually self-indulgent question to ask you. What would the takeaway be out of we binge things? Everybody does want to hear your unique perspective and that branding does matter for SEO.
Yeah, I mean, but you just need to create the content. I mean, your brand will get built on you creating the content. So put it out there. Just get it out there and then iterate. Learn as you go. Then go back to our first topic here. Set up a routine to go check your content every quarter and then come back and just iterate on what you've created. But your brand will be built on you putting out the content. If you fail to do that, you won't get to have a brand. Like, it's just simple as that.
You miss 100% of the shots you don't take, Robert.
Boom. Sports cliche. I love it.
I don't know anything about hockey, but I was reading up on Wayne Gretzky. Last week, this is unrelated to anything, by the way. I did not realize how much of a superstar Wayne Gretzky was. I don't know if you know this, but it's something to the effect of, that's like, you know, Muhammad Ali, Michael Jordan, LeBron James, Babe Ruth, all rolled into one, and then times 10. That's how much better Wayne Gretzky was at the sport of hockey than like anybody else. And for anybody who doubts that, just go look at the records and stats, like the actual numbers. If Wayne Gretzky didn't score a single goal throughout his entire career, he would still be number one in the history of hockey in terms of points, because you get points for assists, right? And he had so many assists that he would still be number one if he didn't score a single goal in his entire career, which is mind-boggling. Yeah. Anyways, now that we're talking about Wayne Gretzky and hockey again. All right, here's my question for you, Robert, and then I'll let you go after this. This is
I can keep going all day, so it's up to you how much you want to edit out from our conversation.
I'm not editing
this together. It's all good.
No, I'm leaving
it. All right,
Wayne Gretzky staying in.
Okay.
No, I want to hear. You said you've been listening to my own podcast. I would like to hear one or two takeaways that you've gotten, not necessarily from me per se, like podcast guests or whatever, over the past 6 months to a year. And again, I don't know how much you've listened, but you made it sound like there was like one or two things earlier or something. And I was like, oh, I wonder what that was. I wonder what Robert remembers from any of those guests or any of that content. Does that make sense?
I'm sorry. Yeah, I feel like I need to look at your show, but like, let's look at it. But I definitely know there was a Facebook or a YouTube ad one recently.
Oh yeah.
So listen to that, Alec. You know, that was a good one. Let's see. we'll figure this out here, because there's been a lot of different ones, and I've gotten nuggets from each one. A lot of it's just also just validation. I'm a big fan of the validation. Okay. Email funnels, autoresponder. Let's start here. I'm just going to go down the list because I got a little something from every show.
Okay.
I will be very honest with you that I have put email on the back burner for 8 years. It's never been at the front of my mind. And I still don't think email is the end all of everything. I think email's like grandma. And I think she's a young grandma. But I think she's, has her best years are kind of behind her. And she's going to be with us for another 20 years. But, you know, she's not as fast as she once was. Oh. And so that's kind of how I view email. I think she's still great.
This is a top 10 metaphor of my entire podcast, easily. This is one of the top 10 metaphors of all time. Keep going.
Okay. Great. Well, that's how I feel about grandma. But, you know, honestly, grandma needed a refresh in my sight. She's been a little stale. And so I really am going back on it. I have a large mailing list, but I've never put a lot of effort into it. So a few things that I'm doing, and I didn't necessarily get all of this from your podcast, but just like reinforce it. I think email's there. I need to get my funnels up. Been refreshing my actual email sequences. I actually recently switched to Write Message. I don't know if you're familiar with it. Yeah. So we're segmenting a lot, and I had a lot of this set up before with Drip directly, but it was a lot of programming and coding, and Brennan Dunn, who runs Write Message, smart guy, I love his stuff, makes it really easy. And so, for example, if you land on a student loan article, it knows if you're a subscriber or not a subscriber based on the content category tag on our site. Then I can pitch you a little box that comes up. What kind of student loans do you have? Private loans, federal loans, whatnot. And I can put you in the right place of the funnel that customizes and tags everything. You know, the student loans is a tough one because honestly, 95% of student loan people, there's no product or service that they should ever buy. They don't need that. They just need help with their federal loans. They're all free government programs, and they all get screwed because they get pitched by banks and other services. So I don't want to screw those people. The 95% of people that have nothing to do, I just want to help them. I just want them to get the right answer so that they can make a good decision. So by segmenting, I can actually find that 5% that maybe have private loans and could refinance, or, you know, a couple other percentages that might want to pay for help that we can actually send to something that's there. And so segmenting has been huge, and that's what we've been doing with Write Message, revamping our autoresponders. That one's been huge.
I'm gonna weigh in here. This is, I didn't make this up. I actually stole this from Brennan Dunn as well. I took his drip course back in the day. It's like two or
three. Me too.
How did you?
Oh, good. Like years ago. Yeah.
One thing I immediately implemented in that, the simplest version of, if you don't want to go buy Write Message, you don't have to. The simplest version of tagging somebody who clicks a link is very simple. Very simple. Every single email provider I know of can do this. And what you can do is, if you have a welcome sequence, which I think everybody should have, and it's a week long or it's a month long or longer or whatever that is, if you're pushing out a couple of different pieces of content, like let's say you take your top five across different subtopics. And this is assuming you know nothing about your audience. You're getting email subscribers. You don't know who these people are, what they're interested in. You talk about student loans. You also talk about investing. You also talk about checking accounts. You also talk about blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
What you can do, for those out there who have no segmentation, make one email pretty hardcore about checking accounts. Make another email hardcore meaning like exclusive. Like this, today's topic is the best online business banking accounts, period. And we're going to deep dive. And here are my top five recommendations. And here's an accompanying blog post and yada, yada. Of course, you need them to click. So maybe don't put as much in the email. Get them to that blog post. But tag them. Okay, this person is interested. They might be interested in other stuff too, but we know that they're probably interested in online business banking accounts. And it's not definitive. There are better ways and more powerful ways to segment people. But this is like the low-hanging fruit of, I have a general understanding now that this person, and my business is even easier, right? Because I can talk about YouTube and podcasting and SEO and Pinterest. And those are kind of wildly different. Like there's some crossover, mm-hmm. but a lot of people are like, I'm not into Pinterest. That's actually me. I understand that person, right? And so I can just add very basic interest-based tags based on clicks and nothing else. And I can serve that person different content now.
Yep.
I got one other. This is my own podcast. I get to rant if I want to. We were talking about timely content as well, like seasonal messages. Something I also learned from Brennan was editing the email templates itself. Like if you are in like a ConvertKit, you can have different ConvertKit templates. It's actually been a year or two since I've used ConvertKit. It was only like two or three like default ones back in the day, but you can also do this on MailChimp and MailLite or whatever. You can insert a little bit of custom code if you're more advanced that will allow you to update or to include a dynamic piece of content in every email that goes out. For example, the easiest way to do this, in my opinion, is to create a custom, not a custom field. That would be on a per subscriber. We're getting advanced now, by the way, listeners. Not a custom field that would be attached to each and every subscriber, but a custom variable, meaning a year, 2020, 2019, 2021. That's a year. That is a custom variable that you could create and insert the short code for the variable in all of your automations. So that when 2022 comes along, instead of trying to update all your automations, you just go change the variable to 2022. You can also do this for a what's happening in Robert's life. Like let's say Robert was a more of a personal brand and you had these email automations that does welcome sequence. You produce some of your best content, maybe even have sales pitches down the road or whatever. You can create a custom variable that's like, what am I up to this week? And instead of writing a brand new email newsletter every single week, you could actually just update that little variable and use it as a quick update and just put the variable in your email automations so that somebody comes into your automation today, gets something timely and relevant. They learn something Robert's been binging on Netflix for the past week. And then 2 months from now, when a new person comes in, assuming you update that one little snippet like once a week, once a month or whatever, it'll also be timely and relevant. That can keep things very, well, I just said that word like five times in a row, but it can keep things timely and relevant with not a whole lot of effort. And you can do it dynamically, meaning you just insert the short code and automations and it just gets pushed out. Anyways, I learned that from Ben. Pretty smart.
Love it. No, it's great. I do the same thing. I mean, I've been using one of the other updates we've done on the website is a lot of custom short codes, advanced custom fields things. So on the back end, I can update one thing and it populates across the whole site, which saves a lot of time, effort, especially for things that change. We kind of do it with dates. I'll tell you my old school way when I started, and now we have the technology. So when I started, we were talking about advertisers, what really hooked me originally. So one of my projects was in Asana. I turned Asana into a CRM for advertisers. So I have a project called Advertisers, and I literally list them. I actually have them sorted by category, banking, investing, student loans, whatnot. And then each of them get their own projects, right? Well, in the description of the project, I say like who the contact is, where I get paid, and then all the locations on the website that this person is located on. So now if a bank or a partner wants to see their content part one, or I need to update something, I used to just click, 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 and I could open all those links really quick. And now I have all the websites, you know, all the locations on my site where they're open. So I still do that. But now with things like dates, interest rates, things like that, we have it all set up with custom fields where on the back end, you can change it and then it just populates out through it, which also gets better content for the users. So like when I first started, I avoided all that. Be like, it was a great rate. Yeah, you know? But now with not having to worry about updating it, it's all done automatically. It saves a lot of time, effort, energy. But started with just literally finding all of our advertisers' locations, putting them all in Asana, lay it all out, which is also a godsend because it's so helpful when things do update or just knowing where everything is. And so big project, but if you start this early and get in a routine of it as you build partners or anything, you know, keeping it all centralized is huge.
Yeah. You know what? I'll just throw out another one that I really like. For anybody who uses Elementor, which is a surprisingly large amount of my audience because that tends to be one of my favorite page builder tools, I did this last year and I didn't really test it a whole lot. I didn't really optimize it, but I still find it really interesting. And somebody could actually take this and run with it. Setting up display conditions for different blog categories. For example, I have a podcasting freebie. And I have lots of podcasting content. I have an SEO freebie, and I have lots of SEO content. Well, I actually used Elementor for my blog theme. Like, I built it out, custom designed it, whatever. It's all in Elementor, 100%. I duplicated my blog post theme. I had a sidebar, too, by the way, with an email opt-in. And I set this specific – I made, like, a podcasting blog theme. and I added my podcasting freebie, opt-in, right there. Like a little pitch, a headline, a pitch, and then an email opt-in form. And I just set the display conditions to only show that one for the podcasting category. And then I just duplicated it, and I had an SEO little opt-in for my free SEO email course. And I just set that to display only for the SEO category, right? That was such a like little simple thing to do. It took almost no time. And I was like, wow, this could actually be really powerful. Just knowing that you're promoting more relevant content. Like, that's all it is. Like, this person landed on my site for SEO category pages. Well, that just got meta, but that's actually one of the posts I rank for or whatnot. And then on the sidebar, there it is. There's my SEO freebie. Same thing for podcasting and funnels and yada, yada. So I think that's actually a really easy thing that people could do as well.
100%. We've been doing that as well. Custom sidebars by category. There's a plugin called, I think it's called Custom Sidebars.
Really?
I think that is, it might be a Genesis only plugin. I don't know, but there's a custom sidebars. And then I'm 90% sure I heard, Gutenberg is just going to add it in as a natural function, which would be handy. Yeah. But yes, create custom sidebars. If you have different verticals, you can create a custom sidebar and then you put a different opt-in, different links, whatnot, craft it for that audience. I think it's a huge win. And I, you know, just boost the relevancy of your content 100%.
Now that I'm looking, there's actually a lot of solutions for this. That's quite a lot. I'm looking through right now. That's interesting. People should go check those out. Oh,
yes.
Man, that's interesting. Low-hanging fruit, too. Or not low-hanging fruit. Let's call it a high ROI activity. Meaning this
is pretty easily actionable.
Yeah.
No, exactly.
Awesome, man. Well, I do got to go. I got another podcast interview in 8 minutes. But, Robert, this has been fun. Obviously, the College Investor is where people can go find you. What's your preferred social that you would like to point people to?
Yeah, so you can find us on anything you want. So if you like to listen, we have our audio show. If you like to watch, we have YouTube. You know, I'm a huge TikToker right now. Our brand is on TikTok. TikTok is a great platform. Honestly, again, low-hanging fruit. If you're looking, deciding if I should do Instagram or TikTok, I would probably do TikTok. I would do Instagram too, but like TikTok would be my primary focus because the virality is there. You get so much organic reach for easy stuff. So check it out. Honestly, you can create content there.
I love it.
I think I'm the only site. If you go to my footer too, I have my TikTok logo there. I have not seen a TikTok logo for social on anyone's site. So I actively am promoting that.
I'm scrolling right now. I'm going to go look. By the way, I'm not going to say you haven't changed your website in like 7 years, but I will say when I first encountered this site, actually, there's a funny story. You probably don't even remember this. So I actually reached out to Robert for a quote. A long time ago, when I first started my personal finance site, and you responded and you gave me a quote or something. I don't even remember what it was, but I remember this. That was the first time I'd ever found your site. This was literally 7 or 8 years ago. It was a long time ago. But it looks roughly the same, like the same feel, same logo, lots of black and white. I just thought it was funny.
Refreshing it up. This is version 5, though. I think that people need to realize that. So, like, when I started, it was a free theme. It was brown with a free Fiverr, or like a Fiverr logo. And then you just iterated. And then it was gray. Like, it was a different color, gray and some red before. And so, red was my action color. Now we're on like a black and white, and a gold is the action color.
Okay. I'm looking at your TikTok right now. That should be fun. I see a lot of young people and not a whole lot of Robert.
No. So again, our team takes care of it. So Justine, amazing, creating videos for our accounts. Yeah. Again, if you also can outsource it, I think a lot of people feel like they need to do this. And if you find the right personality, if you're a personal brand, you can't really outsource it. You are the person. But if you're not a personal brand, if you're a media site or media content, you can definitely outsource it. I mean, even look at things like Vox or other YouTube channels. There's the SciShow. They have a series of like 3 or 4 different people that rotate through producing YouTube videos for them. So then there's personal sites that personal brands that don't, but you can definitely outsource some of this. It depends on your budget, of course, and where you're starting from. But, you know, if camera's not your thing, but you want to be playing on video, there's options out there for you.
I like that. There's always options. The world's open. The world's your oyster. There you go. Robert, thanks so much for coming on, buddy. This has been fun.
This has been great, man. I love it. Thanks for having me.